This is Keeping the Faith on the Mormon Faircast. The Keeping the Faith series explores ways in which our faith can be challenged and ways in which we can overcome those challenges.
So, what was it that made you decide that you shouldn't try to maintain this relationship?
I had been trying forever, and I had been meeting with the bishop periodically to discuss what was going on, because it was so frustrating, and I needed priesthood blessings, and I needed to feel like I was up front with him about what was going on with my husband as far as how he was doing with the church. And he knew, because, you know, he'd talked with my husband and knew that he was leaving the church and so forth. And a lot of things were going on that, as I look back now, I realize I had tolerated way too long. And I ended up going out with a friend in the ward for a couple hours and just sitting and talking and sharing with her what was going on. And as we talked, she kind of said, "Why? Why are you doing this? Why? Doesn't this not sound right to you? Doesn't something sound off? Would you encourage your daughters to do this?" And I realized that things had to change. And so,
well, when she said "do this," I mean, what specifically is she referring to?
For example, at one point we only had one car, and he was depressed, and so he was staying home, sleeping, eating, watching movies, rewinding the movies because he'd missed part of it because he fell asleep, watching TV, playing solitaire on the computer. I mean, just anything to stay checked out of work and life. And like I say, he had his own business, so nobody was saying, "Why aren't you here?" And in the meantime, I was working because I was still trying to keep the lights on and pay the bills. And he also had the attitude at the time that, "Well, I've been working all these years supporting this. It's time for you to have a turn." And when we got married, the idea was I was going to be home with the kids. So I had never finished my degree, and I didn't really have access to a job where I was going to make enough to be able to support us.
So when we're talking about, you know, why are you putting up with this, we're not talking about the church.
Oh, no.
We're not talking about his issues with, you know, apostasy. We're talking about his issues as a husband,
as a
father.
Yeah, much okay. more. I mean, it was annoying that he felt that way about the church, but I was still trying to make that part work. And, yeah, it was more marriage issues.
Okay. So if it's just the church issue, you were willing to make that work.
I was still trying to make that work. I was. It was hard because I was constantly being told I was stupid, I was a sheep, I was, you know. It's hard to keep going in a marriage when you're constantly being told you're wrong and that you're stupid and that you're a sheep and that nobody intelligent would be doing what you're doing. And it was so degrading and demoralizing, and it just made no sense to stay in that kind of a relationship.
So what made you finally decide, "This is enough, I'm weaving"?
Done.
Yeah.
Things had to change. Because like I say, I was working. And then, you know, he would need money to go off and go out to lunch. And like I say, he was not working. He just wasn't working at all. But he would want money to go out to lunch or to go to the movies or to go and play. And yet, we were struggling to pay the bills. We were struggling to keep the lights on. And in the long run, we did end up losing the house in a foreclosure because I couldn't make that much money. But he was doing stupid things, you know, very degrading and very mean to me and to the kids, even though we were doing everything we could to keep things going. And things had to change. Something had to change. For instance, it would be raining, and because we only had one car, I was supposed to take the bus for an hour to get to work because he just might want the car that day. And so I would be in the rain taking the bus an hour to get to work and an hour home in the rain. And it's like, this makes no sense, you know. Wouldn't it make sense to figure something different out? But in his mind, I didn't have the rights to take the car because he's the one that bought it. And it was in his name. And he might need it. But he wasn't working. He wasn't doing anything. So it was very frustrating. And so in talking with the friend, I realized I had to change something. And so I moved out and moved over and stayed with my parents, who lived very close to my work. And so that was my rationale at the time, but knowing that things had to change. And I was there for several months. And in the meantime, we were talking about getting divorced. And I was saying things like, okay, what if we just get separated? Because you say you want your freedom, you want to have your own place. Let's just get separated and fix things. And he would say, no, I want a clean break. I want to get divorced so that I can go off and do what I want to do and I don't have to be burdened with you and the kids. And I want it over with. And, oh, numerous times I would say, let's just, you know. And he didn't want to be responsible for us legally if anything happened and, you know, if I got in a car accident or one of our daughters had been in a car accident and it was costing him some money and he resented that. And, you know, it's he wanted to be free of all of the responsibilities of being in a marriage and having family. And so he basically goaded me into filing because after a certain period, my work changed and so I moved back home. But by this point, I moved in and lived upstairs with one of the kids because it wasn't a good atmosphere downstairs. It wasn't going to work. And so every day, literally, he would come upstairs and say things like, so have you filed yet? You said you were going to file. How come you haven't filed yet? It can't be all that hard. So what do? You know, I filed. And a couple months later, we lost the house, and the kids and I that were still at home moved out.
So as you're trying to decide whether or not you're going to get divorced, is this something that you spoke to your bishop about?
Oh, yeah, and, numerous times.
What was the process that you went through in deciding whether or not you're going to get divorced?
Like I say, I'd been talking with the bishop quite often because of the stress of dealing with the husband that was so against the church and struggling with that, you know, not having the priesthood in the home and needing a better example for the boys and so forth. And I had talked to them lots of times about, you know, maybe we should file, maybe I should get divorced. And him saying, you know, when you decide what you're going to do, let me know. Think about it, pray about it, when you decide. And I was praying about it like crazy. And I'd go to the temple for really often and pray about it and be writing notes to myself of the inspiration I was getting. And for a long time, my inspiration was, you can't get divorced, the boys still need their dad around, because they were still fairly young. And that made some sense, but I wasn't happy with it because I was sick and tired of the situation. But I would tell the bishop, yeah, I know, I've got to stay here. And then he took the kids and went on a vacation for a few days. And a couple of weeks. And while he was gone, I realized it's got to end. And so I went in before he came back and talked to the bishop and said, okay, I've made a decision. I'm going to go ahead and file as soon as he gets back. And he says, okay, that's fine. You know, your choice. And let me give you a priesthood blessing, because he always did. And as he was giving me the blessing, he paused for several seconds. And I thought, what's going on? And when he finished the blessing, he said he had the distinct impression that he should tell me not to file yet. And I thought, great, you told me to make up my mind and let you know. And now here I feel like this is the time, and now you're saying don't. But I thought, you know, he's the bishop, he's inspired, and it's not like it's a rush. I don't have to have it done by a certain time. Let's give it some time. So I said, okay, I'll leave it at that. And he and the kids came home from their vacation, and it was several months later that I filed. And the reason I filed was I had been to the temple again and said, you know, this is getting worse. It's getting blacker and blacker and blacker at home and more negative, and I'm worried about the influence it's having on the kids. And all of a sudden I had this strong, strong feeling that you need to get the kids out of there. They need to not be under the daily influence of an apostate, basically. And I remember, too, one time, and I don't remember if it was that specific time. It might have been the time before. But I remember going up to the front desk at the temple as I was leaving and picking up a schedule for the temple, you know, because they print the new ones. And the man at the front desk said something, you know, thanked me for coming and said, and your husband didn't come? And I said, well, no, actually, he left the church. And now it looks like we might be getting divorced. And he says, oh, my parents got divorced when I was a kid, and it was a good thing it happened. And I thought, oh, okay, so, you know, obviously he's strong in the church. He's healthy and happy and, you know, because sometimes you hear about how much it scars kids to have a divorce, and yet sometimes that's the better choice. And in our case, I definitely felt like if I wanted the kids to be active and to have the gospel in their home and to not have that huge blackness and the negativity constantly around us, we needed to have something different.
And so you moved forward, mm-hmm. and then what happened?
He's not a very responsible person, as you can imagine, with all the sleeping and watching TV and going to movies and all sorts of things instead of working. We had to be out of the house because, like I say, we lost it in a foreclosure. And I and the three kids that were still at home moved into a friend's house in the ward. And he had no place to go. And he had to have his stuff out because the new owners were coming soon. And I'm a nice person. I actually even helped him unload his truck into the storage unit because he couldn't find people to help him. And, of course, I'd had lots of people from the ward coming over and helping me, so it was really nice. But, you know, by that point, he can't ask people in the ward. He would have been uncomfortable. Anyways, he spent a couple of nights on the couch at my daughter's house, and then he borrowed money from a friend and went to Europe for a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is after having, we had been in foreclosure numerous times, and every time he would borrow $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 from a friend to get us out of foreclosure. And I would say, let's sell the house. We can't afford the house. Let's sell the house. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we got to get it. But I like the house. I like this. We can have parties. And no, I don't want to sell it. We'll just fix it up. And it's like, we're getting deeper and deeper into debt, and nothing's changing. So, but he found a friend that would loan him some money, and he went to Europe for a few weeks. While he was in Europe, he emailed me because his all of his money had been stolen, so now he's stuck. And so I transferred money into we still had a joint account at the time, and so I transferred money into it so that he could get it out to be able to get back. Because I'm a nice person, and I told him, this is all I can give you. You're going to have to find another friend to give you more, you know, and he did. Anyway, so he went off to Europe. Oh, and while he was gone, he emailed me, you know, with this, oh, we should stay together. And this is a few months after I had filed, so we were well into the process. And we should stay together. And I said, well, these are the things that would have to change. And I gave him a list of four things that I wanted to, that needed to be different in order for me to even consider calling off the divorce. And before I actually filed, I had gone back to a counselor through LDS Family Services because I was depressed. And it turns out, basically, it was situational depression because when I was around him, the ex-husband, I was timid and afraid and hesitant, and I couldn't do anything for fear I'd get yelled at because it'd be the wrong thing. And outside of that, in my church work, in my life, my social life, my work, whatever, I was great and people loved me and I did fine and I'm strong and confident. But at home, I'm this hesitant mouse that's afraid to get up because I'm going to get yelled at for something. And so I had been going to a therapist, and that helped a whole lot to see things more clearly and know better what I should do in relation to my sanity, really. And that was an influence, too, that helped propel me towards filing. So, but in talking with him, we came up with four things that I would need to see different. And I sent him the list while he was in Europe and said, and we'll talk about it when you get back. And he emailed me back his arguments about why those weren't reasonable and how he's already doing them and he wasn't doing any of them. And then from then on, he got back and he knew we should be together, but nothing had changed. Nothing.
So what were the kinds of things? Yeah, that you're
like
that you're saying?
Get a job, be working, take responsibility instead of blaming me for everything, be accepting of me and of the gospel of the church. Not that he had to embrace it, because I didn't expect that. But I couldn't have the harassment for being in the church. And that's what it had gotten to, you know. And the fourth item was that he needs therapy. And he does. He still needs it. But
okay.
So he wasn't willing to do that? Well, you know, he'd tell me he would, but then nothing changed.
Right.
You know, I'm being accepting. Look, I want to be together. Okay, you know.
Right.
I'm basically doing therapy because he was hanging out with about a dozen guys and they would all talk about their issues and stuff. It's like, this doesn't count.
Yeah.
You know, taking responsibility, yes, and it's your fault.
Right.
Okay, you know, I'm not the only one at fault here. So nothing really changed. But having that clarity of the reasons why I couldn't have things stay the same that they were made a lot of difference in being able to go through with the divorce, because then I could see that things hadn't changed. And really, you know, therapy, well, maybe that had something to do with the church, because maybe it would have helped him. I don't know. Being responsible, well, that's a basic life thing. You would think at his age he could be more responsible and not blame me for everything in his life. I even caused his diabetes. Ooh, because of the stress. Never forget the fact that his brothers and sisters have it too, but I caused it because of the stress. What was the other one? Being accepting, you know, that was in a lot of ways about the church, but it was also about a whole lot of other things. Every hobby I had was wrong. Every interest I had was stupid and dumb.
Right, but this isn't about, you know, you join the church and then we'll get back
no,
together.
No, I never put that condition on things because that wouldn't be fair, you know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that you're not in the church so we won't get together.
Right,
not
but you were all. Willing to get back together under other conditions.
Yeah, if those other things had happened. But I couldn't be back with him and be harassed about the church.
And in fact,
I wasn't harassing him about his choice.
Right.
I wasn't telling him he was stupid for leaving the church or he's dumb or look how miserable you are. I wasn't saying any of that. It was just, you know, that's what you think you need to do.
Well, in fact, he's come back to the church now.
Yes, he has.
How long ago was that?
He came back about 2.5 years ago.
How long have you been divorced?
2.5 years. Okay, let's see. Back up. He left the church in 2002. October 2002.
Right.
And probably in about the middle of 2010 is when he started taking the discussions again. Oh, he hasn't been in the church that long. Sorry, we got our numbers wrong. About the middle of 2010, he starts taking the discussions. And what he told us, me and also the kids, was that he was happier when he was in the church. He missed having his family because he doesn't have all of us around anymore. And he thought maybe it would help him to go back to the church. So he started taking the missionary discussions because that's what needed to happen to get rebaptized. And they worked with him for many months. And, you know, the baptism's on, then the baptism's off and on and off. And I was concerned because I didn't want him getting baptized for the wrong reason. Because I knew, and he had told me that, you know, maybe if I join the church, then you'll come back to me. But like we just said, that wasn't why, you know. So, and he wanted one of our sons to baptize him. And the son was like, I don't think Dad believes it. Why should I baptize him? And we finally decided that it was okay to baptize him, knowing that it was between him and the Lord, whether he was worthy. So, and the frustrating thing is he's involved in the church now, but I don't know how far in he is, you know. He talks about, I ask him if he has a testimony, and he'll tell me things like, oh, yes, I know that service is important, and I know helping people is important, and the elderly are important, and kindness, and he names off these qualities that every church has in common, you know, things that are just good life things. And if I say, okay, what about the Book of Mormon? What about the prophet? What about Joseph Smith and the Restoration? They'll say, well, I don't know about any of those. I'm just not going to worry about them, which works to an extent, but it's hard to have a testimony if you're putting everything on the shelf.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that, you know, maybe he's taken some steps that could get him back, you know, fully into the church with, you know, a
right.
full developed, rounded out testimony. But there are other things that he's done or that he's been unwilling to change that for you would preclude you're getting back together
right.
as a couple.
Yeah, I can't even imagine being back together as a couple. That, to me, sounds like misery.
Okay.
But, you know, too much water under the bridge, it's just, it's not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
But he's attending church most of the time. He has friends in his ward now. He has home teachers and things like that. But, you know, and he tells me how everybody loves to hear him sing and tells him what a wonderful voice he has. And he gets teary when he sings church hymns, which is good. And I think in a sense he has a testimony.
Well, it sounds like he has a testimony of some things.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And he's willing to be in the church even though he doesn't have a testimony of everything. And it's the right direction, you know, because I want him to have the blessings of being a member of the church. But the leaving the church, I think, did so much damage that it's hard to get back to where you feel, you know, like things are good again.
Right. Well, so for you, what is it that you have done through this process to help maintain your testimony?
I don't remember not having a testimony. Like I say, I grew up in the church. I remember getting baptized when I was 8. And I remember pushing through to read the Book of Mormon before I turned 9 because my primary teacher gave it to me when I got baptized, you know, those kinds of things. And I bore my testimony growing up, and I, you know, I was very involved in all those things. And I remember once as a teenager thinking to myself, what if the church isn't true? What if it is all just a big hoax? What if? And then I thought, that's stupid. Of course it's true. Because I've never had a reason to think that it wouldn't be. And I can't even imagine it not being. Because there are so many good things that have come to me from being in the church and having the gospel. And even just when I read stuff about the church, or I read the end sign, or I read the scriptures, or I read things on fair, or anything like that, it feels good and it feels right. And I can't imagine turning my back on that, you know?
So why do you
so think... go ahead. Oh. I was going to say, you were asking how I stayed strong. I was attending the temple, you know, pretty... And it was sad because for a while, I knew I would be harassed if I told him I'd been to the temple. So he'd say, where have you been? And I'd say, well, I went to the movies with friends. Okay, well, in a liberal sense of the term, yeah, I was, you know. But I hated having to hide the fact that I was still going. And that didn't seem right and fair, you know. Because he could flaunt the fact that he was going off to these parties and clubs and stuff. And yet, if I said something about going to conference or going to a fireside or going to the temple, then I would hear it for a long time afterwards about how stupid it was. And so I was going to the temple a lot. I read the church magazines a lot, you know, studying the scriptures, prayer, listening to church music. I love listening to podcasts. I listen to the Fair podcasts all the time, so this is kind of an interesting experience. I don't know if I'll listen to this one. That might be too weird. Anyways, but hearing things, you know, church music and primary songs. Oh, I was the primary president for a while and primary chorister several times. And the primary songs are pure testimony, you know, to sing I Am a Child of God or My Heavenly Father Loves Me. I mean, I can't even think about those without getting teary just because to me those are, we talked about tradition and doctrine. That's the doctrine, you know, that our Heavenly Father loves us and we're children of God and that He knows us and He wants us to have the good things, you know. So, and getting involved in things like in Southern California, there's the Miller Eccles Symposium. That is, they have a lot of speakers that Fair likes and going to things. I remember going to one, my now ex-husband and I actually went to one together several years ago. And that's how I found out about it, that it even existed. And I don't know how he heard about it. But the one that we went to had a man come that was very involved in the Joseph Smith Papers project. And this was before the rest of the world knew that they were doing them. He was just telling us about it. And I was fascinated by that, the idea that we would actually be able to see and have access to all those documents that before that, you know, get special permission and maybe you can get into the archives, you know, now you're going to be able to. So we had gone to one of those together, maybe two, I don't remember. And then years later, once he was pretty much out of the picture, I thought, hey, I loved going to that. I should see if it still exists. And so I poked around on the internet and found it again and started going. And I've gone several times and, oh, lots of times. And love it and take friends to it with me to it. And the Claremont colleges where Richard Bushman used to be chair of the Mormon Studies and his wife Claudia is very involved in, and they've spoken at it, and they periodically that school has programs that are that sort of thing. You know.
Like forums or...
Yes,
know,
yes. I remember when I went to one, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago there that was about the, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the the stories, church, women in the church's stories, narrative project that Claudia Bushman's very involved in. And so, you know, several hours with a free lunch, and we're sitting there soaking up this important, exciting information, and it was very good. So anything like that, I just love going to stuff like that, you know. And I wish I had the scholarly background that the people with FAIR have, you know, but I'm not any of those people, and I haven't studied ancient languages or Hebrew or being a church history scholar, and, you know, I kind of do it for fun, but I love soaking it up.
Well, what advice do you have for family members or friends of a person who's struggling with their faith? Or, you know, what advice do you have for someone who's married to someone or the child of someone who's struggling with their faith?
You know, just the things we've been talking about. You have to keep your own testimony strong, because I don't know that they would do it deliberately, but some of them probably would, but it would be hard to ignore some of the things they say if you don't have a strong testimony, or if you're not willing to go find the answers. You know,
you got to have an independent basis for your own beliefs.
Yes, because if you're only you're going to church because that's what you did growing up, then it wouldn't take a whole lot to knock you over, you know. And there are really intellectual answers to these challenging questions. For every one of them, there's good answers. And yet, if you dismiss them all with a, oh, of course there's no DNA, the Book of Mormon can't be true, and yet you haven't listened to the scholars that really do know their DNA, you know? And if you haven't really looked into the answers, and instead you just believe the people that come up with whatever they tell you that they think is true, then if you're not willing to look for the right answers or the answers that make sense, that support the gospel, then it's easy to get thrown off. And, of course, reading the scriptures and reading the end sign, you know, one of the things they love to say is that, well, the church is hiding the history. But any one of those things, you look, and chances are there's been an end sign article about it. I remember when the article about Mountain Meadow Massacre came out, thinking, opening the issue and saying, oh my goodness, this, I mean, I knew about it before that, but to see it in the Ensign, it's, we're not hiding it, unless the adult members of the church really aren't reading the Ensign, which could be the case.
Right.
You know, you're not going to find us discussing it in Sunday school, but that's not the purpose of Sunday school, you know?
Right.
It really isn't. But the information's out there. But because the internet is good and bad, there's stuff available there that if you're not careful, you wander on the wrong place and you can get caught up in the wrong stuff. And you have to remember to go back to FAIR or check the Ensign or something to get that back to you know, back to the stuff that feels good.
Hmm. So, right. So nurture your testimony.
Nurturing your own testimony.
And go to the places that are going to help strengthen your testimony.
Yes, yes.
Avoid the places that are going to,
cause you to question.
Bitter and angry.
Yes.
And
questions are okay. They're fine. We should be willing to have questions, but we should also be willing to look for good answers instead of just assuming that everybody out there's, there's so many websites and podcasts that are dedicated to either feeding that questioning spirit in a negative way or, you know, I mean, you know what they are, but it's just, you just have to be careful. You know, if it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't a good place to be. But then along those lines, too, is one of the things that is important is that the person that's struggling with their testimony and may or may not leave the church needs to know that they're valuable and loved whether or not they're in the church, because they are. And it's not like I said, I didn't get divorced because he left the church. Absolutely not. But, I mean, would I have married him if he wasn't in the church? No, because I wanted a strong priesthood holder. But just because that had changed didn't mean I was going to throw the whole thing away. You can still have a good relationship even without the gospel. But the gospel sure makes it easier to have that common ground. It's a hard spot to be in, because from their side, they're hesitant to say anything, you know, from the side of the person that's on their way out. Often they don't even say anything until they're already have decided, or they're already so worried about issues that don't need to be that big a deal that by the time they say something, and in my relationship, by the time he was actually expressing concerns, he didn't trust me enough to trust my answers. And so when you're dealing with a child or a spouse that's having these questions, it's helpful if you have that trusting relationship so that they know they can come to you. And just like your friend that was afraid to, you know, that lived next door, that didn't want to tell you things for fear he'd shake your testimony, if they know that we can take it, you know, that it's okay to ask these questions, and to know that when they ask questions, there still are answers. And a lot of times it doesn't need to be that you address every one of these 20 million things. You know, you can go to the, well, was he a prophet or not? Okay, then these all things fall by the way, you know, without going into a lot of detail.
So what I hear you saying is that if a spouse or a parent or a brother or sister or a friend comes to you and maybe just even suggests that they're concerned about something in the church or they've got these questions, that you should be open to discussing that.
Right,
you should not put up the barriers and say, hey, some things are off limits
and we're
not going to talk about it.
And also not say, oh, you're wrong. Don't worry about it, you know.
Yeah.
Because they obviously have an issue and it obviously needs to be addressed. And in a lot of these places, you know, online, people are hesitant to tell their family because they're not sure what it's going to do. And in my situation, I chose to get the support of my family by letting them know what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, so they knew right up front that my husband wasn't coming with me to the temple weddings of my nieces or whatever because he couldn't. And they knew it. And, you know, it was a lot easier than playing this game of pretending that everything was okay.
Yeah. My guess is that what happens a lot of times is that when people have these questions and issues and concerns and are afraid to bring them up, that they fester and they become calcified. So at some point, you know, they've developed an entrenched position,
right,
so that by the time they're ready to go public with these
yes.
concerns they have, now they're in a defensive position.
That's
and,
right.
And they're
yep.
ready to argue and say, I'm right and That's the right. church is wrong. And, you know, by then it's too late.
Right.
So it may be that when these red flags start coming up and if somebody does suggest I've got a concern or a question or issue, that's the best time to try to deal with those and help people to work through the issues mm-hmm. rather than being afraid that if we talk about this
right.
that something
we don't
really
open bad's
going to
happen.
Right,
yeah. right, right, right.
Yeah, so.
And I thought of a couple other things. You're asking about how I kept my testimony strong. And one of the things that really helped was my brother brought me a book right when I was in the thick of all of it. And in fact, I was looking it up yesterday and I'm going to go ahead and buy a couple of copies to send out to some of my kids. And it's called Why I Believe. And it's written... It's several, I don't know, 30 probably different people that are famous.
Prominent
members of the church.
Right.
Saying why they believe in the church. Because, you know, one of his arguments was, well, nobody that's got any intelligence would be in the church. You know, if you're smart, you wouldn't be in any religion. You know, that kind of thing. And yet, how can you argue with these, you know? And so that was a big thing. And that helped a lot. And another thing was, I was reading some of my ancestors' experiences, some of their personal histories. And in one of them, it was telling a lot of really touching things about his testimony and things that had happened to him in his life. And I read through that and immediately was struck with, okay, I can believe this ancestor who, based on what I'm reading here, he didn't make it up and he had no reason to lie about this. And he was telling about it several years later because the prophet had told him, hey, you need to write this down. And, you know, reading his experience, or I can trust this spouse that's practically an ex-spouse that's bitter and angry and upset and screaming and yelling all the time. And I choose to trust my ancestors because they were good, strong members of the church. And I'm sure they had problems too. But, you know, the gospel's true. And I felt it when I read the story and heard of their experiences. So, and another thing I was going to say is, as far as my kids go, is I've tried to, ever since I read Shaken Faith Syndrome, I've tried to stick in little bits of this whenever I can, kind of an immunization sort of thing, you know, and just kind of random times when it fits, you know, to mention stuff that I can't even think of an example now, but you know, the idea about a prophet not speaking as a prophet every time they open their mouth and just kind of putting it out there so it's not something that hits them later, you know, so that they're not one of these kids that when they turn 25 says, oh, I just found out Joseph Smith was practicing polygamy. I never knew that. Well, okay, you know, hey, by the way, kids, are, you know, he did, So if you didn't know it before, you know it now, and it's not a big deal. But if they hear about it growing up, then hopefully it's not a big deal. And it's not that shocker with the rug pulled out from under them when they discover it, you know. And just bearing my testimony to my kids, too. You know, they know where I stand. They know I'm happier than I could ever be without it. And I would never want to be so close to the edge that something would throw me over like that. Life's happier with the gospel. Even though I'm not drinking coffee and I'm not drinking O'Doul's or, what you know, beer, and I'm not doing things that we're taught not to do, it's okay, it's restrictive, quote unquote, but it's there's a peace that comes from living the gospel and from doing what we're supposed to do.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and your insights, and thanks for being on the Mormon Faircast.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Mormon Faircast. If there is an issue that you've been wondering about, you can often find the latest answers at the Fair Wiki, found at fairmormon.org. If you can't find your answer there, feel free to pose your question to the Fair Apologists by visiting the Fair Contact page. Questions or comments about this episode can be sent to podcast@fairlds.org or join the conversation at fairblog.org. Tell your friends about us and help increase the popularity of this podcast by subscribing in iTunes and by writing a review. Music for this episode was provided courtesy of Paul Cardall. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or of FAIR.